Good morning.
May it
please the court, I'd like to introduce on behalf of Immediant Corporation, the appellee in this case, Brian Fagan of the Pittsburgh firm of Kevekan, Weiss, Bowerly, and Hirsch, who will be presenting the argument on behalf of Immediant this morning. He's been admitted pro hoc. Thank you.
Welcome to the court.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Bill Denny, and I represent the Appellant Health Trio. Your Honors, this is a contract interpretation case about a software development project that went bad. After a 12-day bench trial and post-trial briefing, the trial court entered an order in favor of Immediant, ruling that Health Trio breached the contract and that Health Trio waived its fraudulent inducement counterclaim by not timely objecting to Immediant's invoices. This is the appeal from that final judgment of the trial court. I would like to cover 4 points in my argument this afternoon. First, whether the court erred in determining that the October technical documents are not part of the contract. Second, whether the trial court erred in improperly shifting the burden of proof regarding an element of Immediant's claim requiring Health Trio to prove that Immediant did not perform all of its obligations under the contract. Third, whether the trial court erred when it held that Immediant had waived its fraudulent inducement claim by not contemporaneously complaining about the quality of Immediant's work. And finally, whether the trial court abused its discretion in failing to grant Health Trio's motion to amend its counterclaim to clarify the existence of its breach of contract claim. Are the October technical documents part of the contract? The court found that the Professional Services Agreement, or PSA, was an integrated document that superseded all prior agreements and incorporated only attached and future statements of work and not the October technical documents. That was the court's finding. There was never any evidence or any argument even that anything was attached to the PSA.
Don't those documents have stamped on their face the word draft?
Your Honor,
or am I mistaken?
I don't recall that. I can check.
Does appear
on the first page of those documents. And I think it may be helpful to put in context how these documents were put together. These were business people. These were computer programmers and project managers from both sides that were getting together to put together this relationship and build the software product. The first thing they did is they signed a statement of work. It was a boilerplate, two-page statement of work that simply said, discovery phased to determine vision and scope to be completed by January 1. Then it's uncontested that Immediant and Health Trio personnel worked together for 2 weeks to define the functional and technical specifications for the software that Immediant was to produce. That resulted in the various documents, technical specifications, functional specifications, and vision and scope documents that we're calling the October technical documents that the witnesses testified in trial were completed in late October of 2000. At about the same time, in late October, they signed a second statement of work. Its entire description of services is, quote, to execute content member initiative effort to be completed by January 2001.
Mr. Denny, let's try to hone in on the legal point. Your argument is that that Judge Cooch erred as a matter of law in holding that the October technical documents were not part of the PSA. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
What rule of law? That is, what is the legal principle that was violated here, or is it an evidentiary point?
Your Honor, it is a legal principle as to what documents make the contract. That is a question which is reviewed de novo by this court. and the trial court did not properly apply California law.
Okay. Well, the under California law, and I assume the law of most states, if the contract says that certain documents are part of the contract, then that's the result. Is that correct?
Your Honor, that is correct.
And this contract didn't state that, at least with respect to the October documents.
Your Honor, this contract said that the attached statements of work, of which there were none, and all future statements of work would be part of the contract. The prior statements of work were not attached to the document.
I'm sorry. My question was very narrow. There's nothing in the contract that explicitly says the October technical documents are included. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Was there testimony to the effect that the intent of the parties was to include the October documents?
There was testimony concerning that the October technical documents provided the specifications for the work that was to be done.
Are you saying there was testimony that the parties intended for the October technical documents to be part of the contract?
Not in exactly those words, Your Honor. No. The focus of the testimony...
If I understand you right, there's nothing in the contract that requires the result you want us to reach. There's nothing in the testimony which, if it were conclusive as to the fact, would require that. So what are we left with?
What we're left with, Your Honor, are the parties' mutual intentions and their conduct surrounding the creation of these documents and the work that they did pursuant to these documents. The contemporaneous actions of the parties included the reliance Immedient relied on these documents. It helped prepare the documents. It prepared its budget based on them, and it used these documents in performing their work. There is no way to understand anything about what Immedient was supposed to do without reference to these documents, and the parties, by their conduct, intended that these documents would be referenced for a description of what functionality needed to be built into the product.
I'm sorry, there's no testimony that requires the result you're arguing for, but you're saying that there is conduct from which that intent can be inferred?
That's correct, Your Honor. And there are also statements by Immedient in pleadings to the court that support Health Trio's argument.
But those were contested, were they not?
I'm sorry, these are statements by Immedient that these requirements, which were that these documents contain the requirements for the project. And Immedient's post-trial briefing made two statements that absolutely recognize that everybody intended for these technical documents to describe the scope of work that needed to be performed under the contract.
Now, your opponent has used the word evolving technical standards. I remember the word evolving. Was it intended that these documents were cast in stone, or is that your position, and therefore they governed everything through the contract, or were they evolving?
Your Honor, they were not cast in stone to the extent that there was an agreement as to making changes, the specification documents were not so explicit as to every detail of the work that needed to be done. It set priorities. It listed a number of functions that said these are the high priority functions, these are middle priority, and these are low priority, and the parties are to develop the software with the priority based on getting it done on time and as many of the functions in as can be done. So within that document, there was evolution over time. But these were not, none of the parties here were lawyers sitting down making sure that the I's were dotted and the T's were crossed. What we're left with is a collection of documents that leave open a number of questions, and without the October technical documents, leave Immediant with no specific obligations at all by which their conduct could be measured.
Is it fair to say that your position is that under the contract between the parties, that Immediant was required to deliver a workable software by a specified date that conformed to the October technical documents?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, is that the bottom line?
The bottom line. And the date was February 5th of 2001. That date had been extended from January to February 5th under the third statement of work.
And I gather that there's no document, no contract document alleged or disputed or undisputed that says that. Is that correct?
Well, Your Honor, the third statement of work says the entire description of services is, quote, to complete defined scope of release 1 by February 5, 2001. So okay, it
so
references...
We have a date.
We have a date, and it references the defined scope for release 1. So what is that? The only reference is to the October technical documents, even though the words weren't put there explicitly. But that was the conduct of the parties to accomplish that. Without the technical documents, these statements of work are inherently ambiguous.
Well, you're making a leap from, scope of work. I'm sorry, there was a scope of work document that created a date, a deadline date, and it used language which was something other than the October technical documents, and you have linked those two somehow.
Yes, Your Honor, and I linked those based on the conduct of the parties at the time.
Which is a factual inference.
It is a factual inference, correct, Your Honor.
But that factual inference was disputed by other factual arguments. The record so shows. Is that not correct?
I don't believe there's any dispute that the parties were referring to and relying upon the October technical documents in the work they were performing in the December and January and February time period in 2001. I think that the court did not even, the court simply was going upon what was explicitly referenced in the statement of work.
Did release number one attempt to conform to every aspect of the October technical documents?
Immediant reported that it did, and in fact it did not. In fact, it was practically worthless, and did not meet the requirements of release number one as specified in the October technical documents. However, Immediant at the time represented that they made the required delivery on that date, and that it was working software.
Is this first argument of yours pivotal to your position? That is, if we were to reject it, would that require an affirmance, or are the other three arguments that you're advancing independent?
It is pivotal to the argument of amending the complaint to add or clarify Health Trio's affirmative breach of contract counterclaim against Immediant. In practice, it is pivotal to the burden of proof argument because the court.
I mean, what I'm really asking, Mr. Denny, is if we were to reject your argument that the contract included the October technical documents, is there anything left to your case?
Your Honor, there is. There is the argument, there is the court's finding that Health Trio waived its fraudulent inducement counterclaim by failing to object contemporaneously to invoices from Health Trio. Health Trio alleged that Immediant fraudulently induced it.
Your argument is that there's a fraudulent inducement claim.
There is a fraudulent inducement claim, which the court rejected, and In that case, the court decided that HealthTrio waived its fraud claim based on the court's assumptions that HealthTrio contemporaneously knew about the fraud. The trial court expressly declined to consider HealthTrio's allegations of fraudulent misrepresentation. It did not make any factual findings. The court's holding here is clearly erroneous. It makes no sense that HealthTrio would have continued trying to work with Immedient and signed more statements of work if it had known that Immedient did not have the qualifications that it reported to have and that the software being developed was worthless. HealthTrio did not waive its fraudulent inducement claim because it did not and could not detect Immedient's deceit.
Now, there was testimony about that?
Yes, Your Honor, there
and,
was.
Was that testimony ever expressly addressed by the trial judge?
The trial judge did not directly address it, other than generally to say that that HealthTrio personnel were highly qualified and they were there on the scene. They must have known what was going on. They must have understood the code. However, there's nothing in the record to show that Mr. Hilado was able to tell whether Java programs were written correctly. He had no experience, and that's well established in the record. And Immedient was developing software in modules, so it was impossible to tell how one section would interact with another until all the components were assembled. That evidence is referenced in our briefs, Your Honor. And if the court has no further questions, I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Brian Fagan, on behalf of Appellee Immedient Corporation. Although the extensive record developed in the Superior Court involved many complex computer development concepts, the core issues and essential facts of the case are actually quite simple. HealthTrio contracted for the services of Immedient to develop this software and on a time and materials basis, and that's very essential that the contract was on a time and materials basis and not for a specific product. Let
me stop you right there.
Certainly.
Am I correct in understanding that from your perspective, your client was hired to do whatever it was asked to do, and that was there was obviously discussion about what that work would be, but it was a continuing process, and one week it would be please do this project, and the next week it would be please do some other aspect of it, and whatever you were asked to do, you did, and then you submit invoices for payment.
Not exactly, and this does tie into the October technical documents. Immedient doesn't, as HealthTrio has characterized our argument as saying the October technical documents had no value or virtually non-existence for the purpose of what we were supposed to do. Immedient recognizes that, in fact, those documents set forth a guide as to what we were supposed to do. But under this particular contract, this time and materials contract, we said that we were going to bill for what we were going to do. We had an aim about a particular end product that we wanted to get to, but what we contracted for with HealthTrio was to be paid for our time as it accrued for the work on that particular project.
Well, was it a consulting contract, or was it a contract that would lead to a specific product for which your company was responsible?
It was perhaps both, because as I indicated, that the October deck, there was significant discussions about what HealthTrio wanted at the end of the day. And certainly Immedient does not dispute that once the product was finished, It should have turned over to Health Trio this completed functioning software. And the Superior Court
They weren't being paid to give a tutorial on how to do software.
Actually, there's both. We had to develop it, but as part of the contract also, we were also supposed to help transfer the knowledge that we created to help Health Trio continue to work on the software and to maintain it themselves.
So is it your position that the technical documents were evidence of what needed to be done but not part of the contract?
Potentially, because, again, we don't dispute that the October technical documents were a picture of and not a complete picture of what the parties wanted. And that's why this was a time and materials contract, because there was only a picture, an idea of what the parties wanted to create with this software. There was a short time frame. And they understood that they were going to have to almost develop on their feet.
So your burden of proof for a breach of contract was to prove more than just you spent time, correct? You couldn't bill for time to develop a video game. You had to bill for time to develop this particular software.
Right? Absolutely.
Right. And did you present that evidence to the trial court?
We did, Your Honor.
One of the arguments we didn't get to was about the burden of proof being shifted. Are you going to address that?
Yes. And we dispute that the burden was shifted whatsoever. In fact, the Superior Court specifically addressed the requirements of a cause of action under California law for establishing a breach of contract, went through those elements, showed that Immediant and accepted the evidence that Immediant presented, that we met our burden on that. However, the definitive aspect of this case is that there was a prior breach, and that prior breach was by Health Trio failing to pay for our services at some point. And that prior breach excused any further performance by Immediant to complete the software. The bottom line is they stopped paying us. And I think the really significant factor that must be addressed and was never answered by Health Trio, when the court asked, the lower court asked, why did the payment stop in March? And Health Trio's only response was, we don't really know. The record's not clear on that point.
Doug, I want to go back to the metaphor that you used earlier, which was that the October technical documents were a picture. Is it more accurate to describe it as a snapshot at a moment in time and an incomplete snapshot?
It was incomplete because as the evidence below determined, there were constant changes in what Health Trio wanted. There were additional requirements. And at some point in the process, they actually instituted a process calling them change control documents, where Immediant wanted to formalize the process by which some of these changes and requests were being made.
Because the reason I ask the question is that the suggestion from the other side is that the October technical documents were a blueprint, and all you needed to do was follow the blueprint and then deliver the software.
That's not true.
That's not the case.
That's not the case, because there was pages and pages of testimony and with regard to the changes that occurred, the changes that came from Health Trio adding functionality. So if those changes came later, it's impossible that the October technical documents could have been the end-all and be-all of what the product was supposed to be.
Your position is that the October documents had no legal significance, that is, no significance as a legal document. Is that correct?
And with regard to the breach of contract claims at issue.
It didn't create a standard that define a duty.
Correct.
So is it fair to say then that the October documents were simply evidentiary?
I believe so.
Of the progress that had been made up to that point?
I'm sorry, to what progress up to what point?
The progress that had been made in defining whatever it is you were going to do.
You mean after the October technical documents?
Yeah, why would these documents be created at all?
As I said, I believe they were a fairly developed guide as to what the client, Health Trio, wanted. Certainly, they had value, and a meeting does not discount whatsoever that they did provide important guidance on what needed to be done. However, we never really got to that endpoint because we weren't paid.
What was release one? Was release number one supposed to be a prototype of the final software?
In part, it was supposed to be, but there were changes even before that time, and there was dispute in the testimony as to were they significant changes. There was talk about scope creep, meaning that these changes that were being requested by Health Trio were pushing back the dates that the parties had originally identified for a release date.
And was there testimony that whatever release one, as was contemplated by the parties, was contemplated to be, that you, your client, satisfied that obligation in all of the work that it did?
The testimony, I believe, was substantially supports Amedian's position that it did what it was supposed to do. It got to the point of the release 1.0. There was a subsequent release 1.1, which was to further catch up with some of the changes that occurred during the first phase. But yes, we turned over software at that period. There were problems with it, but those were problems that from Amedian's position, they expected and were typical in any type of software development program.
Well, was there a finding by the court that there was substantial performance, if not perfect performance?
I believe that the court considered up to the point where there was the prior breach on behalf of Health Trio, there was substantial performance because under this time and materials type of contract, the court did find that Amedian worked diligently and created a product that was getting to the point where the parties wanted it.
And there was testimony to that effect?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your constant reference to time and materials, it doesn't answer the entire question, at least in my mind. Let's use, for example, the analogy to building a house. A contractor, will contract to build a house, which is the end product, according to certain specifications, designs, and blueprints. But rather than there being a fixed price, it could be on a time and materials basis. So, under that analogy, time and materials is simply the method by which the price is ascertained. How is this any different? Or to put it differently, who is the contractor here? And if it wasn't your company, your client, then who was it?
But the analogy isn't perfect because there really wasn't a concrete blueprint that you would have in that building.
Well, we do know that by February 5th, I gather, your client, not your client, but Health Trio wanted to deliver functioning software to its client.
Correct.
Whatever form and shape that software took.
That's
so
correct.
That was the product. Now,
correct,
who
yeah.
is responsible for doing that? That is, one possibility is that Health Trio was the contractor and your firm was merely the consultant. That is, that Health Trio as a contractor to perform that, to develop that product.
Again,
your answer to my question was, well, yes, but it was also more than that.
Because it was a collaborative effort. Extensive testimony with regard to Rudy Hilaldo, Health Trio's.
Well, answer me conceptually. Conceptually, you're saying that your client was, both parties were a contractor and also consultants?
Well, certainly Immediant was the primary contractor.
But not sole contractor?
No.
Okay, so there was some obligation on
we the... We couldn't be sole contractor because at every step that we move forward, our client came forward with further requirements and changes. They were also the designer of the blueprint and the made amendments to the blueprint as we
went along. I'm just looking for a model template paradigm in which to understand the relationship between the parties. Help me.
I wish I could. I found that the technical aspects of this case are immense and confusing.
But we're not talking about the technical aspects of the case. We're talking about the legal relationship between the parties.
Well, again, this the best way to say is that Immediant certainly was the contractor on the product and on the project, but if it had been just left to the contract had specified at the end of the day we need to have X product, that didn't exist in this case. There was an idea of where it was going to go, but it did have to evolve.
Okay, so your client, what you're telling me, and again, tell me if I misunderstand, that your client was the contractor, but unlike what happens in many cases, there was no blueprint which, if followed, would lead to a finished product that could be delivered on time. It was a work in progress.
That's correct, and I think there was testimony below that used another analogy about a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, which I thought was kind of helpful. We contracted to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and that seemed simple enough. But as we went along, we were the builder of the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You think you put some peanut butter and jelly, slap it together. As we went along, Health Trio said, well, actually we want the jelly on the inside, and then we want the peanut butter in the middle. So that requires taking the bread apart, scraping off the peanut butter, putting the jelly on. It just evolved and changed. It wasn't a set blueprint about here's what happened, here's step-by-step process, and you're going to check the box off as you go along, and that we didn't meet each of those checks. It was a moving target.
On the fraud counterclaim, who has the burden of proving waiver?
Immediant had the burden of proving waiver, and that was demonstrated. And as the court below correctly noted, that and I'd also like to point out that fraudulent inducement claim, as opposed to what counsel indicated earlier, that fraudulent inducement claim was with regard to Immediant's technical capabilities to go into the project. It was about their abilities to do the type of methodology and the type of software development, the code language at issue. It wasn't with regard to other aspects that counsel referred to.
The problem I'm having understanding is how do you determine a waiver claim based on assumptions? I'm assuming, not to be cute about that, but your client does not admit fraud, correct?
Correct.
So what is the basis for assuming actual knowledge of the fraud that was waived by subsequent conduct?
To the extent that fraud existed, which, of course, was only alleged, Health Trio was so intricately involved in this process and had so many opportunities to review what was going on, what product was delivered to them as of, say, February 5th and thereafter, there was never any contemporaneous or even close to later complaints about our supposed fraud. That only came once Immediate had filed suit.
Well, would it be perhaps more accurate then to say that instead of finding a waiver, it was that based upon the facts, the court found that there was no fraud because Health Trio could see what was going on, could see what the quality of your work was, and therefore couldn't later claim that, well, you know, these people were incompetent to do the job.
I believe that is a correct interpretation.
But the trial judge never addressed whether there was fraud, did he?
I believe the trial court did address the fraud issue and determined that, I take that back. I believe the trial court didn't reach that issue because Health Trio, it was clear that Health Trio had breached the contract, its obligations under the contract, and the court need not reach that that conclusion.
Well, in the briefs, there's talk about a distinction between fraud in the inducement and fraud in the performance. And Justice Berger's question, I think, went to fraud in the performance. That is, how could there be fraud in the performance if Health Trio was involved intimately in every aspect of the progress of this software? Be that as it may, what about fraud in the inducement?
Well, again, the fraud in the inducement was specifically with regard to Immedient's ability and the representations it made with regard to its technical capability to take on this project.
Well, did the court address that issue at all? Was that the issue that was waived, or did the court not specifically address fraud in the inducement one way or the other?
I believe that the way that the court addressed it was, again, to find that claim had no legs. They were there. They could have and should have known if there was a problem with the any aspect of the project. They were there. They could have known, should have known. They were aware of many problems that were brought up. They were discussed. Many problems were discussed. They had weekly meetings. The lower court simply could not accept properly that Health Trio could not have been aware of a potential fraud.
Thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, on the last point, the trial court expressly declined to consider the fraud claim and solely ruled that Health Trio's failure to complain contemporaneously was a waiver of any fraud claim. So the court assumed that Health Trio knew, which we feel is a clearly erroneous finding, and the evidence is clear in our briefs. Now, with respect to the time and materials basis of this contract, time and materials is a basis of compensation and not a description of scope of work. This contract is analogous to hiring a contractor to build your home. You've got a set of plans. That's the October technical documents. And you make changes as you go along. The changes that were made in agreement between Health Trio and Immediate, and that happens all the time in these types of contracts. With respect to performance, the court failed to identify any obligations that Immediate had under the contract. So going back to a previous question the court asked, whether or not the court decides that the October technical documents are part of the contract, the court's reversal of the burden of proof is still a relevant issue on the issue of performance, because it was left to Health Trio to prove that Immediate had not performed properly, when the and which was impossible to prove a negative when the court expressly declined to consider any evidence concerning the quality of the software on page 5 in the footnote, specifically declined to consider the expert testimony as to whether the software met technical requirements or was functional. And that was the subject of pretty much the entire trial. The only evidence of proper performance of the contract by Immediate was, and this is in the opinion on page 26, Health Trio's failure to complain contemporaneously proves that Immediate tried its best. The only standard that the court set was that Immediate tried its best, but did not define as to what. The court never considered whether Immediate met its common law duty to perform with care, skill, reasonable expediency, and faithfulness the thing agreed to be done. The court has required Health Trio to complain about the problem long before Health Trio could have realized it.
Well, on page 26, there's a sentence, this, under this analysis of Immediate's work, this court finds that Immediate has met its burden and Health Trio has not. So let's assume that it's error to put any burden on Health Trio. But the trial court found that Immediate met its burden to prove a breach of contract, didn't it?
Well, it says that it's met its burden as to the entire breach of contract claim. On page 25, the court states that Health Trio is not proven by a preponderance of the evidence that Immediate did not properly perform under the PSA. And there is a statement at the bottom of 27. Health Trio's evidence of Immediate's alleged incompetence is contradictory at best and did not rise to the requisite level of preponderance of evidence in order to find for Health Trio. So that the court did not even consider, expressly did not consider evidence of the quality of the software.
Thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We appreciate the arguments, and we'll take this matter under advisement and take a brief recess.